on the evening news. Somewhere there must be a place where they can park their weary shoes. Maybe a camp in the country or a building on the edge of town. But that shelter there across the street is only gonna get me down. Everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. See, I don't want to have to lock my door to be inside, safe and sound. This neighborhood will go to pot with the likes of them around. It's no fun out there in the cold. Yes, I know just how they feel. But I just can't bear to see a hungry face when I'm eating a nice warm meal. Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. I've got a friend who owns a store about a half a block away. Every year she donates goods and money to United Way. But she thinks it's bad for business to have the homeless walking by. She says, why not send them south for the winter so they can stay warm and dry? Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Well, now please understand our position. It's not the way it looks. We want them housed, but out of sight. There are zoning laws on the books. Long as we can clear our conscience and preserve our civic pride, we'll give our consent, even pay the rent on a place where they can hide. 'Cause everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. Yes, we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else.
And that was Mark Levy from his album Take Off Your Clothes, singing Homeless Shuffle. The record label New Clear Records. You're listening to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is a weekly Sunday show every week at 11 o'clock. You get to hear about civil rights for the poor, demonstrations on behalf of basic rights for homeless people, police abuse, local issues such as that. We broadcast out of Santa Cruz, but try to cover a broader area. This week, for instance, you'll be hearing excerpts from the San Jose City Council of earlier this month, which passed an anti-homeless, anti-sitting law that goes into effect in about a month. You'll also be hearing from the Palo Alto demonstration against a similar law that passed a month ago up there and provoked quite a reaction. There'll be updates on Santa Barbara, Mountain View, Berkeley, San Francisco, And, of course, our own Santa Cruz and the court situation here, where a lot of people are still trying to deal with court cases that came out of the City Hall sleepers protest, a 7.5-month-long vigil in front of City Hall, which attempted to alert the community and the city council to the simple facts of being homeless and the specific reality that there's a law that makes it illegal to sleep or cover up with blankets after 11 in Santa Cruz, and at the same time, there are less than 30 shelter spaces or even legal sleeping spaces for more than 750 people, 750 people without homes in Santa Cruz. This isn't a call-in show. Unfortunately, we don't have a studio to use, or at least I don't have access to a studio. Instead, those who want to broadcast on the station put in loop tapes, and that's what I do, looped as I am. You get to hear an hour and a half of me and stuff I've recorded and comment on coming at you. That's what you're going to be hearing for the next hour and a half if you stay tuned to 96.3 FM. If you have any comments or questions, additions, or deletions that you want to put forward, you can reach me by phone at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's the phone number for Robert Norris. That's who I am, Bathrobes Pierre Robert, as I call myself, because of the bathrobe I wear at sleeping band demonstrations. And HUFF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is a group that is concerned with the civil rights of poor people. If you're interested in any of these things, feel free to leave me a message of any length on my machine at 423-4833 or 423-HUFF. And now let's go to the San Jose City Council meeting of April 8th. At that council meeting, a law was introduced making it illegal to sit or lie down in San Jose within a 66-block area in downtown San Jose. The reason for this being supposedly to protect pedestrians, sitters, and business. The only place it would be legal to sit would be a sidewalk cafe, a public park, or a bus stop. San Jose City Council took testimony for about 40 minutes, and then, after a briefer debate, passed it 9-2. And it came up for a second reading last Tuesday on the 22nd of April, and this time it was not even removed from the consent calendar, and the entire consent calendar was passed unanimously. So that law will go into effect probably by May 22nd or thereabouts, and already protests are gathering around it. For instance, next Tuesday on April 29th, at 11 o'clock, there will be a demonstration going from the Community Homeless Alliance's meeting place on 80 South 5th Street to march down to City Hall or the Fairmont or a downtown hotel to protest and draw strong attention to this very cruel, very discriminatory, and rather, well, very unnecessary law. And you can be there. If you're interested in that demonstration, you can give a call to 345-2353. Leave your name and number, or show up 11 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday at the meeting of the Community Homeless Alliance at First Christian Church. And from there, you'll be able to meander on down to the area where it will be illegal to sit, a no-sitting zone. That means no sitting even at a chair you provide with a table to, let's say, register voters. Interesting interpretation of the Constitution there in San Jose. We'll see how their protest is dealt with by the police. Protest actually won't be illegal for about a month, but after that, you may see some interesting action. And we saw that kind of interesting action in Palo Alto Thursday, a couple days ago. There was a large demonstration there. But first, let's hear from the San Jose City Council and the testimony that happened at the San Jose City Council. The recording is not the best, so stop that talking and listen up.
My name is Nancy Nichols. I'm with the Community Homeless Alliance Ministry, and I've been doing this work for approximately 7 years. I'm also a registered nurse. My feeling about the sit and lie ordinance is that at best it's a distraction, and at worst it's truly inhumane. And our reason for saying that is that in my work experience over the years, I've seen homeless problems in San Jose get worse and worse. And I think what David said is correct, that we need some housing in the city. Affordable to people at minimum wage and SSI and situations like that. And in our attempts over the years to problem. The city really can't have housing. We've had very little response. So the problem's just getting worse. And I would ask you to have a little bit more compassion with those who can't afford to live here, because it does have to do with kind of ordinance city pass and the small amounts of housing that you build for them. So I think that the ordinance, like I said, is basically a distraction from the bigger issue, which is that the city needs to build some affordable housing for homeless people. And I hope that you would take that into consideration before you vote for something as superficial as this ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, who's next? Scott? Scott Waitress here in the Homeless Alliance Ministry. Just today, we're down at the church serving meals to the homeless. And I think everybody here is mindful of the fact that there are people living in third world conditions in the midst of one of the most affluent cities in the United States. This is a growing trend everywhere. San Jose need not be vilified. They're not causing the problem. But what city is addressing the root cause of homelessness? The lack of affordable housing. Cities throughout the nation have criminalized the poor, vilified the poor, tell the poor you're not welcome here. But what city has the moral fortitude to say, you are our brothers and sisters, the homeless are children of God, and you're welcome in the city. We'll do what we can to take you in. We'll open abandoned buildings. We'll consider you one of us, and we'll make this your city too. That's the vision of San Jose that I have. I work in the downtown churches. When the armories closed, we took in 200 people. 200 people. Those people today are living along the river. Those people today are sleeping in front of your businesses. If the city council has the vision of San Jose for the future, what is the future of the poor in San Jose? Is it going to be a city divided? A city where the poor are cast out or embraced? One of us or one of them? That question is incumbent upon you to answer. And those of us who work on the front lines can tell you unequivocally, the problem's not going to go away. It's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Families with children, working people, housing is the answer, not criminalizing the poor. God bless you.
And that was Scott Wagers of the Community Homeless Alliance, and he's the fellow with others who will be marching downtown on Tuesday to protest San Jose's sitting ban, which not only makes it illegal to sit down in that 66-block area, you can sit in the park, but at dusk, the park's closed. If you do sit down and don't move, you face up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine for the first offense. Amazing.
Thank you. I can't fax the motives down. I'm against the sit-down law. I'm against this, as well as the zoning and amortizing ordinances, which will be discussed next month. It targets the homeless and all others, some that are not homeless. We like to hang out downtown. I'm downtown a lot myself, and I never see anybody that would want to sit in the doorway or anyplace else. I'm over them all the time. And I never see anybody in the door, in those doorways besides going in and out. So it's just another law to target people like us. And I know I would rather have the homeless and the poor and the group home people here than those who disperse them. And what else did I want to say? I'm hoping that this law is not passed for that reason. Thank you.
With us. Let me call out the next batch of cards before you do your remarks, please. Jose, Becky Johnson, Satish Wong, Ron Aurora, and Robert Molnick or something like that. Yes, sir. For those people whose names I just called, please line up here behind Mr. Jose. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Madam Mayor, council members, citizens of San Jose, my name is Robert Norris. I'm from Santa Cruz and have lived in San Jose as well, and I'm a member of an organization called HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I also work with the group Food Not Bombs, so that you successfully mediated with several years ago. And I want you to consider that the amount of testimony you hear in the letters, you have a thick packet of letters supporting the ordinance, I don't see a packet of letters opposed, maybe due to the fact that the first I and anyone I've spoken to who opposes this ordinance has heard about it was in the Mercury News on Saturday. Consideration you might take into account. What we have here is an ordinance that essentially criminalizes sitting within a 66-block area. So that means that anywhere within that 66 blocks, if an older person wishes to sit down, she or he faces technically the threat of arrest. Now you say, well, there are certainly sidewalk cafes you can pay. Yes, there are.
Parks.
And there are parks. I don't know how many parks are within this area. Certainly there's one large one. There's also bus stops. But how many seating facilities actually are there within the 66-block area? This, I think, is something you should really look at very specifically. I tried to contact First Redevelopment Agency. They referred me to another agency earlier today to find out what the answer to this question was. Apparently, they didn't know, and I don't know if the staff that's prepared this ordinance knows either. How many benches are there to sit down? Penalties of up to 6 months in jail. This is a misdemeanor for the first offense. That means jury trials, folks. That means those of us who wish to protest this ordinance, and I will be one of them, we'll be going through trial and court and tying up your courts around this ordinance on the issue of basic civil rights. What that means also is, consider what this ordinance says. If I'm a petitioner, and I want to set up a table to register voters in this 66-block area, it looks like I'm going to have to go to the city to get a permit to do this. So it seems to me that there are First Amendment problems with this ordinance as well. I can't sit down with a clipboard and register voters on this, in this area, even if I'm not blocking the sidewalk. Even if I'm not interfering with business, even if I'm not even sitting near a business window. So there's another problem with the ordinance there. Now, we heard some comments from the merchants, and certainly they should have their say on this, and we should be concerned about the business health of the city. But we must not mistake exaggeration for fact. All-day loitering may indeed be happening in some cases. This ordinance does not ban all-day loitering. It bans sitting down more than once you're warned. That's the fact and the clear words of the ordinance. I want to commend the staff for actually acknowledging that this ordinance isn't simply concerned with tripping and falling. Well, that's one of the specious rationalizations that's presented. I sat through a ludicrous session in Palo Alto where the police could not give you one instance of anybody who had tripped or fallen, not one claim against the city, and yet that was the whole basis on which this ordinance was being put forward because they didn't want to use the word panhandle. First Amendment problems they thought they had with that. We must be honest in these discussions with each other. We're all concerned about the civil code of behavior downtown. A civil code of behavior downtown, however, does not mean jailing people who sit down if they have no other place to sit. I have a flyer here for you, which I wrote when I went to Palo Alto and discussed a similar issue, though there the issue was much more limited. There's only a 10-block area they were considering. I'm going to give it to you for your consideration. Also, I want to point out that blocking the sidewalk is already a crime. Urinating is already a crime. And if the merchants who are protesting so loudly against this problem were really concerned, I would think they would get together and open some 24-hour bathrooms, which I understand are not open here in San Jose. I know this is a problem. I know that bathrooms get vandalized. If we're a civilized city, this is certainly something Europe has done. We can do it as well. We're almost finished. Almost finished. We're the residents of San Jose. You're going to drive homeless people away from the downtown. Where do you think they're going to go? Are they going to disappear? We know that. So I suggest what you need to do is follow one of the alternatives that may have been suggested in the staff report, which is to send this ordinance back to re-examine it for First Amendment problems, to determine if there are a sufficient number of benches, to consult with residents, get together with homeless advocates as well. You can come up with something better. I have confidence in you. Thank you.
My name is Robert Molino. I represent the Community Homeless Lines Ministry. It's hard not to elaborate on anything he said because he said everything. The business district has some good points, like the gentleman who owns the taqueria, and he said that he would be willing to allow homeless to work, pick up papers or whatever. that kind of compassion, and even furthermore, more compassion is needed because the business district, they say that it's a problem that the homeless are loitering in the downtown area, but the actual problem, again, is affordable housing, lack of affordable housing. These people would not be on our sidewalks if they had somewhere else to go. It just, Also, the reason why it seems the homeless are being targeted is because most of the homeless, the food trucks and the shelters are, or not the shelters, but places where the homeless convene happens to be in, within the 66-block radius. Also, I just feel that the business district should have more compassion for the and some more reasoning for the real problem at hand. Because once the shelters, once the armory closed and the police have been doing their camp sweeps, that leaves the homeless nowhere else to go, absolutely nowhere, but business districts, but being able to sit in the park and just use the property like everyone else does. That's equality, that's human rights, and again, I feel that you should rethink this proposal. I'm strongly against it, and I will be one of the people that will tie up your airport systems as well. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, members of the council, my name is Joe Zankin. I'm with the Office of Human Relations, but I'm also speaking on my own behalf here. I'm talking against the ordinance, but I have mixed feelings about it. I grew up working in my father's hardware store back in Valley, Michigan, and I know free access is very important for merchants. On the other hand, I'm very concerned about the, I guess I would put it in the symbolism of this ordinance. It's kind of a cleansing piece of legislation. It doesn't offer any alternatives. I would feel much better about it if there were alternatives. Georgia Carter Center is about the only place around that has any sort of a day program where people can go and get the training or motivation or whatever you want to call it to move out of their condition. If there were some kind of a companion action on the part of the council, I would feel much more positive about it, that if people were offered a genuine alternative, that's my concern. Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Next speaker.
Hello, Madam Mayor, council members. My name is Becky Johnson. In Palo Alto, recently we heard testimony from the police and city bureaucrats documenting the safety hazard presented by people sitting or lying on sidewalks and causing congestion to occur on the sidewalks. I have a much more practical suggestion with alleviating this common complaint of too many people in the downtown area. One, we have too many shoppers. Now, I've devised a plan to deal with that. We can have people whose last names begin with A, letter A through J, can shop on even calendar days, and K through Z on odd calendar days. This would significantly reduce the congestion on the sidewalks. Second, we need to ban Christmas. Christmas draws way too many people to the downtown area, posing a public haste, public safety hazard, and council members should be very concerned about this. And three, in testimony we heard that in Palo Alto, the seven people who fell down or injured themselves on the sidewalks in calendar year 1996, five were over 70. Obviously, people over 70 pose a health and safety hazard and should be banned from the downtown area. So to recap, shop only on odd and even calendar days, ban Christmas, and ban people over 70. Because, of course, this ordinance is definitely not an anti-homeless law. Remember, safety first.
Thank you. Next speaker.
I would like to do this right now because I work at the social services at least five times, 5 days out of the month. And last month I calculated 2,958,831 people have become homeless in the San Jose area. I also like to say that 7,000 a week we have looking for a job, especially in the San Jose area. I would like to also say that the homeless people are growing every single day. And And it's true. We do hang around the streets because we have no place else to go. There is less and less food served to us every night, especially at the some of the places. I think there's only two places that we can eat at. And the portions are very, very small. It can only maybe, I'm not even full because I am still hungry. This is getting to be ridiculous because this is really called starving the homeless people. We do not get but maybe a very small check during the month, and we are lucky enough to get something to drink with this check. And I like to say that I have been a victim ever since I became homeless. I do have a small room, believe it or not, off the streets, and I've only been off the streets for 3 months. I am very thankful, but we have problems with prostitution there. We have problems with abuse, alcohol, and also we have the problem with abuse of drugs. And this causes people to steal our food from our own little rooms. And I also like to say that we don't even have that much money to furnish ourselves the toilet tissue. And this also disappears continuously because these people have to support their own drug support and alcohol support. And I would like to say that, you know, I went to Santa Cruz. Their town is really worse off than our town. They have a lot more homeless people. And believe it or not, they are taken care of a lot better than here in San Jose. I really wanted to let you know this because I know the man who was talking up here is from Santa Cruz, and I know a lot of people in the area. I do a lot of talking to homeless people because that has been my job in the last 3 years since I have been in and out of being homeless.
Could you conclude your remarks, please?
Yeah.
And that inevitable voice interrupting the San Jose City Council of April 8th's public comment section was Mayor Susan Hammer, who apparently had no interest whatsoever, or very little, in hearing this testimony, and was going through her pro forma motions. At least that was my interpretation. Kind of call her the Iron Woman of San Jose, Hammerhead Hammer, as we used to refer to her in the demonstrations we had 3 or 4 years ago. And she was equally resistant to any kind of acknowledgement of police abuse, provision of services for homeless people when the Winter Armory shelter was closing, and so forth. Well, if you want to be a part of the demonstration that's going to be happening on Tuesday, April 29th, you can show up, as I said, at 80 South 1st Street. Make that 80 South 5th Street. That's First Christian Church at 11 a.m. And they're going to be marching downtown to spread the word that sitting down is not a crime. As we said in Palo Alto, hey, hey, ho, ho, sit, lie, law has got to go. Join them or give them a call to show your support at 345-2353. That's the Community Homeless Alliance. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Unfortunately, there are no call-ins to this show. We're still a station without a home. We're going to do the court update next, but before we do, here's a reminder of who heads the highest court in our country.
Sitting on the highest bench in the land is the Honorable Justice Rehnquist, rendering opinions when our liberty takes a stand with the gavel of truth in his clenched fist. Housing discrimination was declared illegal, but William can't sell his to Mr. Brown or Mr. Siegel. Well, it might ruffle the feathers of the American eagle, says the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Interpreting the highest law of our nation is the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Affirmative action is reverse discrimination, says our new Chief Justice. Case dismissed. Constitutional intent is what he means to say, lest our founding framing fathers should roll over in their graves, for never in their wildest dreams would they have freed their slaves, says the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Presiding over cases which will set a precedent is the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. argument, ruling who and what and where can be kissed. Homosexuality is anti-family, and all the other judges are inclined to agree. Rather than flunk jury Falwell's test of morality, grins the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Now the Right Reverend Chief Justice of the Supreme Court is the Honorable Justice Rehnquist. Preaching from his chamber, it's a sin to abort with a flick of his judicially bent wrist. Women look better in the family way. Barefoot and pregnant is what we used to say. It'll never be the same if they pass the ERA, quote the Honorable Justice Rehnquist.
From Mark Levy's album Take Off Your Clothes back in the mid-80s when Reagan was president and Meese was attorney general and the Supreme Court was a little different, but not that much different. And things may not have gotten that much better. In fact, they seem to have gotten a lot worse for welfare recipients. Anyway, in Santa Cruz, we have police problems of our own. I wish I had a tape to play you of last Tuesday's Santa Cruz City Council meeting at which the Santa Cruz City Council turned down the proposal of their own Citizens Police Review Board to uphold the police chief's plan, which drove me into tearing out my hair. The details of that situation I may be able to get for you a week from today in terms of actual footage, or I should say audio footage of that. The problem of police abuse is happening everywhere. In our own town, Police Chief Steve Belcher unilaterally in the summer of 1995 was found to be ignoring complaints, or should we say, ignoring the law and not passing on complaints to the Citizens Police Review Board as provided by the law and as itemized by his own department code, his General Order C-7. And rather than apologize, admit he was making some mistakes, explain what the problem was, and so forth, he simply went and changed his department's written law to conform with his practice, which had been violating the Santa Cruz City Council's enabling law for the Citizens Police Review Board. The Review Board law says all complaints shall be forwarded to the Citizens Police Review Board from the police department for review by citizens who are not a part of the police, and so it's presumably, although not usually in fact, have some kind of independence. And what Chief Belcher's department did at his direction and with his knowledge and consent was they kept a whole category of complaints away from the Citizens Police Review Board called inquiries, and this was in direct violation of their departmental order C-7, which stated that inquiries were a subsection of complaints. And it's all in black and white, and anybody who wants to go and look at the department order can see that. So what did Belcher do? That's the name of our police chief, Steve Belcher. He went and changed his own departmental order unilaterally without consulting with the city council, without consulting with the Citizens Police Review Board, and made it his own policy that inquiries were no longer a subsection of complaints, and so he didn't have to forward them by the city law to the Citizens Police Review Board. So if you went in and said, gosh, you know, I don't like what this officer did, and that the police chief decided that was not really a complaint, unless you specified real clearly that it was a complaint, even though it clearly would be a complaint to anyone looking on, he could classify it, and did, as an inquiry, and it didn't get any Citizens Police Review Board, and was simply swallowed up in the bowels of his own Internal Affairs Committee, and who knows where that would lead. In fact, the Internal Affairs Committee has a different standard of proof than the Citizens Police Review Board in order to prove your complaint before the Internal Affairs Department of the Santa Cruz Police Department, you need to show clear and convincing proof, enough almost to send a case to the DA for prosecution, whereas in the Citizens Police Review Board, you only need to show a preponderance of the evidence, that 51% of the evidence shows there's been some abuse. You don't have to, you know, be a Florida attorney or a New York shyster to get your case heard and acknowledged. So Belcher violated the law, and instead of acknowledging that his department had made some mistakes, he then went and unilaterally changed the law without even going to the city council. And what happened on Tuesday night was the Santa Cruz City Council upheld, actually it ignored the issue whether Belcher had violated the previous law. It simply said his new law was fine, which said that he could bury inquiries, things called inquiries that were complaints, at will. This was over the objections of the Citizens Police Review Board. And this whole thing was spearheaded by City Council member Michael Hernandez, who was, of course, the police mole on the Citizens Police Review Board when he was on the board, and then when he was elected to the City Council, he became, again, the policeman's pal on the City Council. He and Scott Kennedy pushed this sucker through, and actually I think it got a 5-2 or a 4-2 vote since one council member wasn't around. Celia Scott and Catherine Byers dissenting. They wanted the police review board, they wanted the minor offenses not to be called inquiries. They were going to allow the police chief to bury inquiries, but they wanted the category defined more carefully so that a, quote, minor offense could not be simply stuck into the inquiry category and thus never reach the Citizens Police Review Board because it was called an inquiry and not a complaint. The whole issue really is kind of academic because the Citizens Police Review Board doesn't hold public hearings, has no real independence at all, holds homeless people in some contempt. They haven't upheld one homeless complaint last year, according to their staff member, Gary Yamane, and they're getting less and less complaints because people don't trust them. The black community has no confidence in them. I don't know of one Hispanic person who's filed a complaint with them. It's a real farce. And, of course, what we need are massive demonstrations and some kind of alternate exposure of these examples of police abuse. Well, in San Francisco, there's a similar controversy brewing, and we turn to an anti-police violence activist, Keith McHenry, who also works with Food Not Bombs up there, to describe and discuss this. This is an April 9th interview. Well, we're on the line with Food Not Bombs activist, Keith McHenry. Hey, Keith.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, you dog, you. So you're involved in organizing against police violence. Last time we talked to you, you've been in and out of police commission meetings dealing with the cover-up of the Aaron Williams case, I should say the Mark Andaya culpability in the Aaron Williams death of 1995. Currently, Officer Andaya is still skating around, or he's been suspended. What's his story?
Okay, on the 12th of May, he will be back on duty with an semi-automatic pistol in plain clothes in our community. And this is a concern to the community because he's killed two African-American people so far.
Who are those people?
One was Aaron Williams in June of 95, and then also a Jerry Stiltz over in Oakland in 84. And this has become a crisis point since the ruling class in San Francisco is trying to contain it as a problem of the Aaron Williams case and the... the AIDS benefit raid, and
the AIDS benefit raid happened what New Year's Eve a year ago?
Correct, right,
and that's where numerous people were roughed up.
And one of the guys, Haggett, was an officer who was suspended for 90 days. It was his fourth 90-day suspension, and he's also under investigation for the shooting death. He pumped three bullets into a man, Edwin Sheen, at the corner of Golden Gate and Hyde.
This is Officer Haggett?
Yeah, Officer Haggett. He's got a history of really bad history of violence, but he's like part of this cadre of the Police Officers Association that's kind of running San Francisco, unfortunately.
So the new regime under Police Chief Lau and Mayor Whitewash Willie Brown isn't actually in control?
Oh, definitely not. The POA is in downtown business are running things, and Brown and his people are doing just like what Art Agnes had done back in 88. The police makes a decision, and then the mayor's office pretends like they are the ones that made that decision because it's more important to give the impression of...
Give us some examples of how that has happened historically and recently.
Well, for instance, the Art Agnes, for instance, was in Hawaii, and then the...
You're talking about Mayor Agnes, who was mayor actually before Mayor Jordan, 1988 to 1992?
Yeah, this is just one brief example. He was in Hawaii, and Officer Lieutenant... Dick Holder of the San Francisco Police ordered Futnabon's arrest, and the mayor on August 15, 1988, and 45 riot police were used to arrest 9 people for sharing food in what became the first food arrest in San Francisco.
And eventually, after that, you have had more than 1,000 arrests, right?
Right. Now there's been 1,000 arrests. That was the first 9 arrests, and what had happened was then the mayor gets back to the city, and this event is occurring. And he then has to stand up for the police, and you could see in his public statements that he was unclear what the whole reason why the police were so heavy-handed in attacking us, and he had to get up to speed, and then essentially be an apologist for the police. And it was a thing that was run by the police and wasn't run by the mayor's office.
Wasn't there actually an incident?
Caught off guard. And it was done to embarrass the mayor into a position of being compliant with the... the police and downtown business were fearful Art Agnes would be a liberal and threaten the power of downtown business, really is what went down with that. Now, in this case, Brown is smarter than Art Agnes, the former mayor. But Willie Brown, the current mayor of San Francisco, also has to dance the tune of the San Francisco Police Department. And... really, I think people will all think back to Milken Moscone, and that's really what is the is that threat, that actual thing that happened.
You're talking about the assassination of Mayor Moscone
by Dan White,
Supervisor Milk, in the mid 70s, right?
Correct, and that's still in force here. That's
by a
like
police officer, Officer Dan White.
Dan White, correct, and he got 7 years for killing the police commission. I mean, for killing a San Francisco Board of Supervisor official, and two elected officials. They killed 2 of them, and he got 7 years for assassinating the mayor and the supervisor.
And then again, killed himself, right?
That's what people say. There's no evidence of that. No one really knows. And there's like always been this idea that White just has a change of identity and he's part just doing something different.
Really?
Yeah, that's the main theory I think that I hear usually amongst the people in San Francisco. Of course there was the White Night Riot, and when those people discovered that when the verdict was announced, and the famous Twinkie defense, he ate too many Twinkies, that's why he had to pop off the mayor and so on. But I had a friend that was a clerk in the sheriff's department and was shocked to see before Milk and Moscone were killed that they were selling free Dan White T-shirts.
Really?
At 850 Bryant Street.
You must be kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
Wow.
I've heard that from a couple of people that were working on staff in the sheriff's department at the time.
Well, maybe they were just prescient.
Yeah, somehow they knew in advance. That
maybe they consulted the astrologer, Ronald Reagan's astrologer.
Right. So anyway, though, that energy is what is driving politics in the police trip that's going on now. So what's happened is that there's supposed to be a lot of reform happening in the San Francisco Police Department.
Indeed, we've heard that the police commission has been revamped.
Right. A bunch of commissioners quit. Now they're having trouble getting some new commissioners, but they got a new president who is a former activist, Pat Norman, who is the president of the police commission.
Is there going to be any changes with her present?
No. We can tell that nothing is going to change. That civilian control does not exist.
Now, are you saying that? It sounds almost like a dogma you're repeating. What evidence do you have from, let's say, Norman's past record that there will not be a change of attitude and policy?
Well, this is, I think we can see it a lot. I have 2 really concrete forms of evidence. And the first concrete form of evidence is the Mumia Abu-Jamal protest on the anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., which was April 4th.
You mean this April 4th?
This past April 4th, 1997, with Pat Norman as the current and acting president of the police commission.
And what happened in that protest?
And it was the same stuff as it always happens. We were pressed up against walls on a couple of times with riot police who wouldn't let us proceed with the march. It was a peaceful march, about 150 to 200 people. At the height, maybe it was like around 300 people. It certainly couldn't fit on tiny little sidewalks that they were trying to force us on in the Tenderloin. They wouldn't let us into the Tenderloin. We were sealed off immediately within a few minutes of getting the march starting. People were clubbed right at the beginning of the march.
How many people were clubbed? How many people were clubbed?
In the final analysis, it's dozens of people ultimately clubbed.
Because the news media reported here that there were, quote, no arrests. So.
There were no arrests, but it was a pretty frightening thing. What happened is, we stayed on the sidewalks. We were, like, attacked at all times, so there's no way you could even get off the sidewalks into the street. Finally, when the protest, and we had, you know, it's pretty difficult marching with cars in the middle of the protest and stuff, no way to, you know, you can't really go in a protest. It's, like, really not it's outrageous that there should be this heavy police presence and this heavy police violence.
How many police officers were involved in this, in monitoring or...
There's about maybe 15 to 20 patrol cars, maybe a little more, a few paddy wagons. The paddy wagons, then they had like maybe 15, 20 guys on bicycles, another 15 or 20 people on motorcycles, and a riot tactical police squad. Maravich was sort of directing people, as Maravich is famous for being the person on the Michelle Shock tape, choking Michelle Shock on the album. Maravich also is famous for he's supposed to be an undercover cop that knows all about everything. He claimed I was paid by the Soviet Union to organize these demonstrations.
You mean you were paid by the Soviet Union, say, 7 years ago before they dissolved to organize demonstrations now, or?
Well, he made that mention out of the list. The Soviet Union was still barely hanging on at the time.
Oh, 1988.
He'd been an undercover cop investigating me and knew I was financed by the Soviet Union.
Hey, I never realized that, Keith.
That would be a fantastic thing. They had a few dollars. Officer Holder, who's the commander of the San Francisco Police Department, pinned me up against the cars on two occasions using his unmarked police vehicle.
He did this personally?
Yeah.
Is this just sort of a special attraction that he has for you?
Yeah. Well, he was the first person to arrest me in San Francisco, and he was directing the arrest at Golden Gate Park.
So it's sort of a historical tradition.
Right, and he's traditionally been the head of the Special Operations, which is the Red Squad here in San Francisco. And he was monitoring the event pretty carefully and trying to pin me up against cars twice with his vehicle.
Right.
Cars as a weapon. We were then on Valencia Street, and around Valencia Gardens, we finally took the street again, and there was like all this construction. There's no way to walk on this little...
Now, the march began where and went to where?
Well, Talon Park was going to go ultimately 16th and Mission.
And so about halfway down at Valencia Street, you were able to take to the street again?
Yeah, we're finally back on the street again, but they were, like, past probing us and stuff, or, like, riding their motorcycles at that point into us, and their bicycles and stuff, and trying to force us back onto... They would periodically, like, try to force us back onto the sidewalk, and then we'd be on the sidewalk. It was a pathetic event, because... You know, it's like 150 people on this tiny little sidewalk trying to hold signs and banners in March. It's ridiculous. And there's no traffic, really, to speak of on Valencia.
Now, was anybody videoing this whole thing?
I was audio taping it. There are like, commercials, you know, the Channel 4 and Channel 2 and all that videotaped it.
Did any of the police misconduct get out on the national media? Or they?
No way. In fact, while their Channel 4 is showing an image of this officer swinging his club over his head, smashing this woman who's holding a banner to get the banner from her, and really violently. Well, anyway, I should finish do the story in chronology. We get to the police station at Mission Station, and they have maybe 20, 30 riders surrounding the station with long batons and their helmets and everything, and then more cops are joining the demonstration at this point, and then we get
down to about 21st, so that the police station that 17th in Valencia, we were going to backtrack over to the bar station so people could get away, but they wouldn't let us go that direction, and they forced us up against the wall up on 21st in Valencia and surrounded the whole march, and everyone was under arrest. And then eventually, Roy LaRiva from National People's Congress, or whatever it is they are, from that National People's Campaign, who had the sound permit and who had made the arrangements for the march route with the police, started pleading with the police to let people go. And they said, no, they were in charge. And I have a really intense audio tape of all this. And they were started, that's where they clubbed people bad. And,
what was the provocation for clubbing the people?
They were saying that the march was over. And that they were in charge, and the demonstration was over, and that we were being arrested. And that the fact that people were trying to continue to walk down the streets, and at this point we're near this place called Pub Cafe, which is where a lot of activists hang out and stuff on Valencia. And so people were coming out of the cafe and watching this, and we're trying to just, and so they were starting to round up people that were just like people on the streets that weren't even at the protest. So we're all pinned into this wall, and eventually Gloria Oliva makes an agreement with the commanding officer that they spread this out 5 by 5, but we have to leave the area. So they let us let the first 5 out. I'm in the first 5, and I went and stood over by Club Cafe and talked to some friends of mine. Then they announced they would not let any more people out unless I left the area. But I went into people like shuttled me into Club Cafe. And a bunch of people started going into Club Cafe because the riot police started going towards us. We get into Club Cafe, and there's a bunch of people in there, and they tell us that we can't come out of the club no matter what, and they put riot police in front of the front door and club anyone that attempts to get out.
There were actually people clubbed who attempted to leave.
Yeah, they would, like, use their batons against people and force them and physically thrust their batons at them and hit them so they, you know, it was clear you weren't going to go out there.
Clubbed at Club Cafe.
So we end up, a bunch of us are in there. Then they drove people off down the street. They divided the whole group up, and they had riots pushing people north and south on Valencia, and trying to break up any groups of people that would gather. They would go in and start using their batons against them, not over their heads, but at waist level into the people's sides and stuff.
And this again was on what date?
That's on April 4th.
Did the alternate media, the alternate news weeklies, cover this in any detail?
Well, we won't know until today.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I haven't gone outside yet, I don't know. But then the next thing that happened was then we had the national, the San Francisco conference to organize the National No Police Fatality Day on October 22nd, and that was very successful. Quite a few people came, and there was a lot of really animated and open debate about strategies and so on, and I thought that went really well. And then that was on Sunday at
This conference happened this last weekend, or?
It happened Sunday at 5:09
hours. I see.
And that was an all-day event. And then there was a vigil from Mark Garcia, who was killed by San Francisco police at the exact time and location that he was killed, the anniversary of his pepper spraying death on Cesar Chavez at South Van Ness. So we had a pretty big memorial service there that made a lot of media, actually. And then next morning, there is the spin control on KQED radio, Michael Krasny's show, which was interesting, where they had the head of the Office of Citizen Complaint, the head of the Police Commission, the head of the Police Department, or Deputy Chief Saunders, and the head of the President of the Patrol Officers Association, all like totally like trying to put the spin that the department is fantastic. There's a couple of, you know, 1% of the officers are bad, but otherwise it's not. You know, it's the most progressive, best organized, most humanitarian department in America. You know,
this was on Monday morning or Tuesday morning?
This was Monday morning on KQED 4.
Did you call in and make a comment of your own? And
I was able to get in, which is unusual, and be able to speak. And so I said I did not think that was true, that, first of all, that the history of police violence in San Francisco does not start with the AIDS benefit, which is the new story, is it starts with the AIDS benefit. That all police crises and everything about the police starts with that benefit and moves to the present as opposed to there being any past. And then that's in all the Chronicle stories, Examiner stories, the radio. That's the way it's all presented now. That's the official position, is that there's only 2 cases of police wrongdoing in San Francisco history. Those 2 cases would be the AIDS benefit and the Aaron Williams case, and it's not clear. That's essentially the official line these people had.
Did you present your theory on KQED that there has been no significant reform in the police commission or the police department, that the policies are controlled by middle echelon people like Holder?
Well, this is exactly what I said. I said, in my experience, it was not an issue of some rogue cops causing trouble, that it was the department was organized to suppress people's rights, and as an example, I described briefly the march that had happened the Friday, and that the idea was to build community trust, because that's what they kept all saying, that doesn't seem like a very good way to build community trust, is to violently suppress a demonstration.
Are demonstrators complaining to the OCC or the police commission about the behavior of officers during that march?
Well, we're hoping so, that people will come out tonight at Wednesday night at the police commission meeting and denounce that, although there's some frustration with that, because the fact that we were not arrested and that we were let out five by five was a good strategy by the department, because it's given this impression that this is the new reformed police department, because now, even though they do stop the protests from happening and they do surround everybody and physically control them and force them to end their demonstrations against their will, that the fact that the people were not arrested is somehow this mark of
Well, are they, you say that dozens of people were clubbed?
I would say that I have heard a number, I saw maybe six people, including myself, clubbed at my end of the protest where I was standing.
Are those six people and any others that you may have seen going to come to the police commission and
to... Well, we've been trying to get them to come, but there's been some problems about that, and part of it is that problem of some of the people thinking, well, maybe because it was, we weren't arrested, that it was not so bad, that we were only detained instead of arrested.
So there's sort of a division.
Somehow an improvement. And there's some people that are saying that this is actually somehow an improvement.
Hang on a second, Keith.
Even though these were people that were clubbed.
I hear you. Just a minute. So, Keith, for those who are supporting a reform of police policies, what numbers do you have? What suggestions? What meetings? What's happening?
Well, the basic thing I think people should realize that there isn't any reform, that the whole attitude of Pat Norman and of Mary Dunlap and stuff is one that the system is really working now, that everything's going really well.
Who is Dunlap?
Dunlap would be the president, the director of the Office of Citizen Complaint. And I was interviewed by their investigators twice, and I was actually questioned about my political affiliations and how the demonstrations were organized and who was in charge and did I have any role.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I ended up getting questioned about. But then when I brought a complaint against the police for using the, this heavy-duty tactic of bringing this community organization called Residents Against Drugs to a homeless rights meeting that was held in Golden Gate Park, and this gang intimidated the homeless people who were trying to make decisions about organizing resistance against the police sweeps in Golden Gate Park. So instead of them, they ridiculed me during the investigation, the people from the OCC. So I mentioned that I didn't have faith in the Office of Citizen Complaint and so on. And then all over the air, these people, like, one by one denounced me, going, McHenry's fire and crazy. And Saunders was kind of shocking. He's been held up as being a very positive and progressive force in the department. Said that he had attended the demonstration, and the demonstration I described was different than the demonstration he was watching, essentially saying I was a liar. But I have it on audio tape, and it's very heavy duty what really went down compared to what Chief Saunders is claiming went down. Or one other problem could be that Chief Saunders thinks that the police having the right to stop any protest from going forward is somehow a way of building trust in the community. Maybe.
So when will this tape be aired? Is this going to go on San Francisco Liberation Radio?
My personal tape that I took of the action has already been playing on San Francisco Liberation Radio. And actually, we've made made a special little show, like a skit out of it.
Maybe you can send us a copy of that, Keith.
Yeah, we'll try to get you a copy.
We'll play it down here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. One last question, since I know you've got to go. You said there was a meeting of organizing resistance by homeless people to the sweeps in the park. Under the Matrix, but we don't call it Matrix program of, not Jordan, but now Willie Brown.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about that meeting, what happened, and is there any organizing going on? Do you have any numbers for us?
Well,
Well, it's apparently, according to the Coalition on Homelessness, over twice as many citations and arrests for homeless people as under the Jordan administration during the same period of time. It's also, that meeting kind of fizzled because of the tension of this gang.
So when was this last meeting? What's the name of the organization?
That was like, 5 months ago, four months.
So the organization has sort of dissolved since then?
That hopes, because of the suppression and everything, nothing got going.
I see.
And there isn't anything going around organizing against the attacks on the homeless, which is very frustrating. And a part of it is that there's always about to be these deals with Brown, but that's not going anywhere. And there's a lot of the community activists that are tied to Brown are like trying to put the skids on any kind of resistance to Brown's administration, which was a very frustrating experience.
So again, it's the old story of once the Democrats get in power, the opposition that was at least vocal, if ineffective, even loses its voice because they are now in collusion with the Democrats. In
power. That's kind of what's going on. It's very frustrating. Now the
very frustrating. Now the other thing though is that the. I think that listeners down there should be aware of is that the end of the KQED forum program, Pat Norman talks about how there's all this moving all these equipment out to Hunter's Point to this new facility that's being the new police facility out there. And actually it turns out some police are complaining that the radiation that is there has caused them health problems, you know. It's a very radioactive...
What do we need to know about that?
But what's gone on, though, the very final comments of the new president of the San Francisco Police Commission is about helicopters and the other crowd control equipment that is other equipment, including the three armored personnel carriers, and they're going to be unveiled and used in a strategy of using this new equipment as opposed to... be the next kind of thing that we're going to see. So as it turns out, for Northern California, including Santa Cruz County, the federal task force on counterterrorism task force is in place. $2 million have been allocated for paid informants. INS is very heavily involved, and an unknown number of INS officers are involved. 9 Federal Bureau of Investigation officers are coordinating this task force. Helicopters and armored personnel carriers have been issued to the San Francisco Police Department, and apparently there's a plan to start using this equipment in the Mission District.
How do you know that the Santa Cruz County is a part of this?
Well, it's supposed to, that's one of the...
Our police chief, Steve Belcher, has assured us that his group is not a part of this terrorism task force.
Well, it may be, like we got the same story up here, the San Francisco Police aren't supposed to be involved in it either. But it does cover Northern California, and it is based in San Francisco, and I would be shocked if Santa Cruz is not considered part of Northern California.
Because I know we were concerned about the terrorism bill federally, which, essentially targets anybody who gives humanitarian aid, even to a group that has been designated as terrorist.
Yeah, well, my understanding of what I'm seeing personally with my own eyes is that there is a very important... effort to suppress people's civil liberties in Northern California.
But not along the lines of, let's say, using court action or executive action as you feared would be happening once Clinton's terrorism bill passed.
Oh, that could definitely happen. That hadn't necessarily happened yet, but that's what they're talking about now.
Who's talking about it?
I mean, that's what the media has been saying about the counterterrorism task force.
Well, I know, as I told you yesterday, we have had 3 visits from the FBI against nonviolent activists connected with the City Hall Sleepers protest. Kitten Reynolds, Linda LeMaster, and Jim Costner. FBI agents have been interrogating them about claims that they are part of a militia or part of a plot to blow up a federal building or storing bombs or running guns or whatever. But wholly off-base charges that have nothing to do with what these people do or what these organizations do. It's kind of spooky that the FBI could be so loony as to believe these or pursue these kinds of leads down here.
Well, the San Francisco, Food Not Bombs in Pomona Food Not Bombs, Fort Worth, Texas Food Not Bombs, San Francisco Food Not Bombs, and a number of other Food Not Bombs chapters have been harassed by federal protective services, although on a couple of occasions it was the FBI, like for instance, all of Fort Worth Food Not Bombs equipment was seized by the FBI. After the Oklahoma bombing, in conjunction with the Oklahoma bombing investigation.
They seized their cooking equipment?
They seized their cooking
And that was the ever-informative anti-police violence activist Keith McHenry,
also a Food Not Bombs worker last April 9th, talking to us on the phone. Next, again, let's go back to Santa Cruz, closer to home. We have an interview with a local homeless activist who's actually homeless. Unlike myself, I live in a room, but I'm concerned with civil rights issues and talk about them a lot. She lives in her van and on the streets and in shelters and wherever she can, and has been homeless for some time. And she has a particular perspective on the Downtown Association's new Real Change, Not Spare Change program, as they call it, the attempt to encourage people not to give money to panhandlers on Pacific Avenue. And here's Laura Tucker. Laura has been kind of an acute observer of the local homeless scene, as well as running through all the homeless numbers herself. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
And you've been kind of watching this new campaign by the merchants, Real Change, Not Spare Change, an attempt to deter people from being compassionate on the mall and giving out any money whatsoever in an attempt to, should we say, assist the downtown merchants in sweeping away the homeless. Is this a good idea? Is this going to rid the city of alcoholics, drunks, scam artists, and other ne'er-do-wells? What do you think?
Well, first of all, I'm against ridding the city of scammers, alcoholics, drunks, and ne'er-do-wells, just because I don't think that we have the right to pick and choose our society. And, you know, this whole idea of cleaning up the streets and making it be just the way that you want it to be, we have to accept everybody in the society. And so, no, I think it's a really bad thing, just the whole trend that we have towards starving people out, making them go away, pretending that they're not there, go to another town. You know, it's not okay to give anymore. It's not okay to, people are afraid to talk to people that are panhandling, to sit down and find out why they're panhandling. And just the whole trend in the society that people that are working are the ones that are supporting the people that aren't working. A lot of the people that aren't working are the ones that are protesting logging and or whatever. You know, there's all kinds of work that we're doing as non-workers that the workers have no time to do. And so anyway, and I was reading the article in the Sentinel where they talked about how cool everybody thinks they are for panhandling. Panhandling is not fun. It's humiliating. It's not easy. It's very difficult. And I've been homeless and jobless and welfareless even until recently since August of last year, and have run into a lot of people. I think we have a tendency to pigeonhole people into just being a particular group. I've run into, you know, completely clean and sober homeless people to completely, you know, drunk homeless people. The whole thing about aggressive panhandling, I haven't seen it. I was aggressively panhandled a couple of times while working. Out of all the times that I came down to the mall and gave money, which I enjoyed, and I think a lot of people don't mind sparing a quarter, you know, or, I mean, I think that there's a misconception about what we, you know, I don't think there's as many people that are put off by spare changing as they would lead you to believe.
It seems to me that it's almost like a merchant power move. It isn't really rationally related to the business cycle or what's going on there. It's simply merchants have this sense that there are some people, I'm sure, who are put off by it, you know, or are put off by people sitting on the sidewalk, or are put off by people with, you know, rings in their ears or black vampire-type capes on, which is a sort of a game they play down on the mall on Friday and Saturday evenings. And they may not indeed come back, and they may not find it congenial. But the question is, do we want to shape the entire mall based on the predispositions and predilections of that particular group of people, or the merchants' fear of offending that group of people?
Exactly, and it's all based on fear. It's based on fear of black clothing and piercings, you know. It's based on fear. I think also the merchants are under a misconception that you know, we're not under the best of times economically, which may be a little bit more of a reason why they're not getting all of the business, and to blame it, there's always someone to blame. You know, I can't remember how many months ago it was, but there's a little coffee stand that used to be outside.
John's coffee stand, outside of Logos?
Outside of Logos, and he had posted this thing after they closed down, blaming the you know, lack of his being able to keep his business running on kids that didn't even really hang out at his tables. They were close. They hang out around the water fountain right there, and then of course there was what we call Hippie Cup Corner, which is right there. But you know, he chose that location. He could have catered to the people that were there. He could have offered something like sandwiches or something other than just coffee. He had lots of competition. There's all kinds of places to drink coffee on the mall. He didn't offer refills, you know, and I don't think that the business folded because of a few people standing around his booth. I believe, which I don't know, but if I had owned that stand, I think that I wouldn't have blamed the failure on everybody around me, you know. And so I think that's a trend with the merchants, too, that, you know, if I attack, you know, I'm under stress because I'm a business owner, so I'm going to attack a bunch of kids around me instead of see what I can do to expand my business or make my business run better.
Yeah, you know, I also found that this may well be the case in San Jose and Santa Barbara and Mountain View and Palo Alto, where, of course, anti-homeless laws are coming down, and I'm talking about that elsewhere in our show. It's also interesting. I talked to a panhandler on the streets yesterday who sells the newspaper Street Spirit, which I write for, and I guess, which you've written for, too, Street Spirit.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah.
Yes, you did. And he, as I was standing there with him, somebody came by and just gave him a $20 bill. And I said, okay, I'm going to start panhandling down here, too, because all these stories about welfare Cadillacs and rich guys. He said, no. He said, that happens extremely rarely. Is that right?
Very rarely. Very, very rarely. And I've done that, too, when I was working, especially around Christmas time or whenever I got paid. It's very rare for somebody to hand out a 20. You know, usually it's a dime here, 3 cents there, a quarter there, you know. And also, I've noticed that the majority of the panhandlers at a certain time of night are panhandling for beer. And there's a misconception. I mean, I don't know. I think that that's okay. Knowing some of the people that are panhandling for beer, granted they are alcoholics, but a lot of them are fighting heavier drug addictions and are away from those drugs, and they need the beer to get by. And a lot of people that are homeless, they can't hold jobs, because if they hold jobs, they're going to buy drugs. They're going to buy cocaine, especially cocaine and heroin. And so they're not working, and they panhandle for beer every day. And, you know, these people aren't living happy lives, you know. There's this misconception that they're just happy bums that make all of this money, pulling all of this money, panhandling. You know, they're trying to pull in, like, $3 or whatever it costs for a six-pack, you know. And I think if people were really concerned about some of these very nice and intelligent people, they could sit down and hang out with them and talk to them. They're so afraid. Anyway, I don't know. I mean, that's a sensitive subject because you're supporting alcohol. But there's people that don't mind doing that. They don't mind kicking down a quarter for a beer, you know, towards someone's beer habit.
I mean, I myself am kind of an almost absolute teetotaler. Almost never drink. I've never been drunk. You know, mm-hmm. I'm just sort of never got into it. I mean, other recreational drugs like marijuana, even LSD, you know, I've had some experience with, but never alcohol, really. Not do any. I just don't like it. But I know that when I hear laws being proposed, like in Mountain View, which will go for its second reading in a week, that it'd be illegal to drink alcohol publicly anywhere except, let's say, in a restaurant or an enclosed area or at a public event where it's permitted, when I hear they're going to pass such a law, it just seems to me outrageous. Because it means that people who are poor, who don't have houses, they will, in essence, become minors. They won't be able to drink anywhere legally. And you can say, well, you know, drinking is, certainly it's widely abused. Mm-hmm. But it's also, there's an even greater number of people who don't abuse it. I mean, if you look at the...
Oh, for sure, in the homeless community. For sure, I believe in the homeless community, there's a lot of people that don't do any drugs that I've run into that don't even smoke pot, you know. And
what I'm saying, though, is that for a person who's an adult to be able to make a choice to drink a beer in public, provided they're not being abusive, provided they're not drunk, is, I think, a basic civil right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it seems ridiculous that towns and municipalities can criminalize. I'm changing to another subject. I'd rather get back to the panhandling, the spirit changing.
I mean, actually, I'm a little bit on the fence, especially because I think most of the aggressive panhandling happens with alcohol. I'm kind of fed up with alcohol for a lot of reasons. Family members that have been drunk, you know, and so I mean, I think as a non-alcoholic, a lot of us are fed up with that. But back to the panhandling issue. Another point that I wanted to bring up is I haven't seen these cards yet that they're going to be passing out, but other things that people spare change for, they spare change for gas, they spare change for coffee in the morning, there are services that aren't available, especially, oh, here's a card, okay. After 6 o'clock at night, there's food available at 4 o'clock, and Friday through Monday, there's food available at 6 o'clock. After that, there's no food available, there's no shelter available, and so I really don't know how much a card is going to do if you're cold, if you're hungry, if you have no place to sleep, and no money, not even enough to... A cup of coffee gets you indoors. If it's raining, you can get indoors and have a cup of coffee, if they don't kick you out just from the way that you look, which I've seen also. But let's take a look at this. Say no to panhandling. Don't let your money be used to support destructive lifestyles. What's their definition of a destructive lifestyle? That's another thing, too. I mean, we're basically running into yuppie versus alternative lifestyles here, and what's considered destructive to me, going to work every day to a job that doesn't support, I don't know, I think this whole society is moving towards the twilight zone, you know, and we're using gas and oil to drive to work and back every day, and basically I believe that a lot of these people that believe that they're supporting us, which in no way, shape, or form are they supporting us, a lot of us don't even collect welfare, are actually supporting the destruction of the earth, you know, so
what
they
accumulation of wealth by a few people.
The accumulation of wealth, and also to me, it's a completely pointless life. You're born and you die, you consume a bunch of resources and fill up a bunch of landfills, and what have you done for the earth? What have you done for society? And they're telling us we have destructive lifestyles. Give me a break. Okay, let's see what else. Best way to help to contribute to local agencies that provide food, shelter, counseling, and job training. Well, that would be good if they'd actually check that out. I mean, I actually would like to see people... I think it's better to just hand the money over directly and to have direct contact, because we need to start getting along and conversing with each other. But,
this program was actually tried in 1988. They call it Give a Hand, Not a Handout. And it was the same thing. It was encouraging people to be less forthcoming in giving money to people. Primarily, it had nothing to do with, I think, any concern about people's lives. It had to do with the fact that they didn't want them hanging around their stores. And,
right.
And I mean, that's a legitimate concern for a merchant in a certain sense, but I don't think you should dress it up and mask it in another guise and say, oh, we're really concerned about these people. It doesn't help them to do that. No, they don't care whether they're being helped. They care whether they're in front of their stores, and that's their concern. They want to move them away.
Okay,
that's it.
I don't think that is a valid concern. Like, that's the fourth thing they have on here. Walk with confidence. The streets of San Jose belong to all of us, which we're talking about Santa Cruz. But anyway, how can you walk with confidence? For us, how are we going to walk with confidence? We have so little sense of security at all, and the streets do belong to all of us. We have no right to... We can't sit, we can't stand, we're loitering, we can't sit, that's illegal now, we can't ask for money, we can't sleep, it's illegal to sleep, there's nowhere to eat, there's nowhere to use, there's no bathroom services available. I mean, we're basically getting into, like, torture techniques that they used in concentration camps. You can't sleep, you can't eat, you can't use the restroom, you can't sit, you can't stand, you can't... Drinking is self-medication, I think, in a lot of situations. A lot of these guys are vets, you know, I mean, they're still living in hell. It's horrible. And on the back, they have a number you could call, and I think it would be really interesting to call this number at a certain time of night and see if they're actually able to house that person or give them food or give them what they need, because I... To be honest, I seriously doubt it.
Interestingly enough, in 1988, around the time of the Give a Hand, Not a Handout program, there was a lot of demonstrating at City Council about the fact the council was criminalizing sleep, or continued to criminalize it as they do now here in Santa Cruz. And Mayor Marty Wormhout's solution was to give out a little card which gave the number of the River Street mini shelter, which at that time had 2 beds for homeless people and 12 beds for mentally disabled people. Which is sort of an amusing joke on the homeless population. We called them joke cards. And that, I think, is probably pretty much what these cards are, because at least in terms of shelter, this is the San Jose card, but I assume the Santa Cruz card is going to be the same or similar. There is no shelter for other than the 30 people who are pretty much the booked residents of the Summer Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which is the emergency shelter program in Santa Cruz. Any more comments on that?
No.
And that was Laura Tucker. She's recently been appointed to the Board of Directors of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And if you want to complain to her or give her some suggestions about how the CCH, Citizens Committee for the Homeless's programs are going, they run the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, the only emergency shelter program in Santa Cruz, as well as the ill-fated community house, which is still a fantasy and a $2 million price ticket sitting on a empty lot locked off from the homeless by a chain link fence right next to the Homeless Community Resource Center. If you want to talk to her about any of these programs or concerns, you can give her a call at 457-9754, extension 208. Again, 457-9754, extension 208. That's Laura Tucker, now on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board. CH, by the way, had its monthly meeting last Thursday. They met, and they still haven't done any auditing or even appointed an auditor for their community house project. They demand the $2 million scam that replaced the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, and of course we have no campground for homeless people, a sleeping van that makes it illegal to sleep outside, and a bunch of tickets hitting the courts. Speaking of which, the court update, I promise you, I'm now going to give you the City Hall sleep crime chain gang lockdown case. The seven folks who chained themselves to the furniture last September 10th, then went to trial a month or so ago. They got a mistrial, as you may know. One courageous juror, actually two in the case of the second charge, held out, and the defendants were not found guilty, but not innocent either. And the prosecutor decided to try them again, and some of them have decided to plead out. I think they're going to take something like 120 hours of community service or voluntary service so they can actually do work with groups like Food Not Bombs and perhaps, if it reconstitutes itself, Feed the People, a group that was feeding downtown but is no longer at the moment. The court situation looks like it's been pretty much postponed into June, except for the case of Pat Ring, who will be facing his accusers. He is accused of saying fuck you to Mayor Rotkin when Rotkin came out and essentially supported we call him a troll buster, a man who was attacking a woman at the City Hall Sleepers protest verbally and abusing her, and Rotkin came out. And Pat and Rotkin got into an interchange, and now Pat is being accused of disturbing the peace. And then there's another charge that Pat had a sign posted, legalized sleeping at the City Hall, that was it protruded too far from the edges of the City Hall lamppost. Both these charges are misdemeanors under the city's infamous injunction, and he faces 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. Again, that's May 5th. That trial will begin, scheduled to begin on May 5th. That'll be a Monday. And there'll be a hearing on May 2nd, the prior Friday, all in Department 1, Judge Kangaroo Kelly's court, to just consider the motions aspect of it. I think motions will be at 10 on May 2nd, and then trial starts 9 a.m. May 5th. That's Pepper Tongue Pat Ring. It's been largely postponed, as I said, until June, and there's some controversy about what's going to be happening. Dan Hopkins' infraction trial, he's the fellow who got the lion's share of the tickets in front of City Hall and is going to trial on three of them. That'll resume on May 30th. And we'll have more about this in subsequent editions of Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. That's the show you're listening to. I'm Robert Norse, and this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, on your radio dial, 11 a.m. every Sunday. Tune into this show, which concerns itself with civil rights on the streets. Well, on the streets is where the Palo Alto civil libertarians were, as well as the homeless people, 3 days ago, well, Thursday. And let's hear some of what they were saying. It was a very successful, large demonstration against the Sit Lie Law, which went into effect there on 10 blocks of University Avenue on April 24th, Thursday. Police made no arrests, but there were a lot of speeches, and folks are organizing for further demonstrating. As I said, there's a demonstration in San Jose on Tuesday. That's April 29th. Starts at 11 a.m. at First Christian Church. That's 80 South 5th Street. Go on down there and help them. In the meantime, hear what they said in Palo Alto. My apologies for tape quality, but bear with us.
About 7:10. There's a number of dogs here. What's your name?
Shadow.
Shadow. Is Shadow going to sit down illegally here tonight? Example of a criminal dog, I must say. Actually, no, dogs are allowed to sit, aren't they?
Not before.
start. What's your name?
Paula Bradley.
What are you here for, Paula?
I'm here to protest the ban against sitting or lying on a public sidewalk on University Avenue.
Now, what if the police ignore this protest as expected? Will you be back for a second protest?
Well, they'll probably ignore the protest. They'll ignore the protest.
Right.
That wouldn't stop me from being here now or later.
Right. What I mean to say is if this requires three or four or five protests, are you likely to return to this? Or is this Are you one of these criminal sitters we've heard about here?
No, but I could be. I mean, at any time I might feel like sitting down and, you know, I might sit down on the sidewalk and then I'd become a criminal. So.
Unless you had a cappuccino in one of our upscale cafes.
Yeah, well, maybe that'll keep people from sitting down and it'll keep them moving along with that cappuccino.
Anything you want to say to Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Everybody protest these cruel and unusual laws against people.
Indeed, more cruel and usual, unfortunately. But yeah, thank you, Paul.
Don French, who is here gainfully employed, apparently, with a camera in hand. And Don, you, well, I last saw you in the cafes of the hate playing chess. But,
right.
Before that, you were working with the Vehicular Residents Association in San Francisco in 1988, where the San Francisco police and the liberal Art Agnos was attempting to do something similar to what Palo Alto is trying to do to its homeless here.
Yeah, it was a little different. They were trying to prevent people from living in the only shelter they had, which was their vehicles at that time. And so we formed an organization, Vehicular Residents Association, to fight that. And we did successfully for a few months, for about half a year. But eventually the moratorium was lifted, and the police were once again busting people for sleeping. Here they're just busting them for sitting or lying, which is even worse, sitting or lying on the sidewalk.
As apparently they're going to try to do in Santa Barbara and San Jose. Both of them passed similar ordinances yesterday.
Is that right? I was not aware of that.
Although Berkeley, as you probably know, went the other way and eliminated its sitting ordinance.
Well, Berkeley's always been a little bit ahead of the curve, but they're slipping these days, a lot of areas. But it's good to see that they're still hanging in there a little bit anyhow.
Oh, yeah. They've taken the first step in the other direction, which I think, hoping a lot of people will support them and encourage their city councils to do something similar.
Good for Berkeley.
Anything that might update us on San Francisco?
Well, I'm living down in Mountain View now, and I don't spend very much time in San Francisco, so there's not much I can report. I'm not really too familiar with what's happening.
Well, Mountain View recently passed, it's coming up for a second reading, the sign ordinance are asking for spare change near a roadside.
Oh, yeah, I'm aware of that. I don't know what is wrong with these communities. Pretty yuppie communities to start with, and they can't tolerate people exercising their free speech rights, and they can't tolerate people who seem to be less well off than they are. And it's a shame. I mean, it's a shame in the real sense of the word. So people should be ashamed.
Are you going to be going to the Mountain View's second city council meeting a week? I guess it was a week from yesterday it's going to happen.
I have to admit, I didn't know that was happening.
I'll give you an update on it. I got one in my bag, if you're interested.
Please do. I'll try to make it, for sure. Okay. Thanks, Robert.
Thanks, Tom. It looks like the crowd growing. Looks like maybe, 100, 150 people? What's your estimate?
Something like that. Quite a few, more than I expected.
And we're talking to
Kerry Andrew Crittenden.
It's the man whose business card sits on my desk. I remember that guy. You got a sign here, Kerry. Sitting on the sidewalk is illegal as of 4/24. So pull the sidewalk out from under me. Now, what is that supposed to mean? Are you suggesting demolishing the sidewalks of Palo Alto?
I'm saying that the sidewalk's going to move before I am.
Wow. Well, now, it's been said that this demonstration has been, shall we say, toned down. Because we have good liberals who don't want to really challenge things directly, but just sort of make a nice little protest and then go home. Is this merely a bad rumor?
Some people, that's the case. I think that there's a handful of us that are going to push it as far as we can, as far as, you know, opposing what we believe is wrong.
I'm one of the organizers of tonight's event.
This is the Leverchek faction coming up here.
Yes.
I'll record her just for the hell of it, and then we'll talk to you later.
Sure thing.
Thanks.
My pleasure. We have several speakers tonight, and we want to get started on that so that we can get over to University Avenue before it gets much later. I'm going to go first as first speaker. I'm been a resident of Palo Alto for almost 29 years. I just finished 3 terms, 9 years on the city's Human Relations Commission, and that ended just about a month ago. I thought I'd give you some background, first of all, in how tonight's event got started. And it started the night that the City Council of Palo Alto voted in favor of this ordinance, which was on March 10th. And Ellen Christensen and I were there at that council meeting the night that it passed. We were extremely disappointed at this council action. And so we decided then that we were going to protest by sitting on University Avenue when it went into effect. And today is the first day that the ordinance goes into effect. We decided we would ask a few other people to join us, which we did. And from that, it just kind of grew and grew and then sort of snowballed. And here we all are tonight. We had 3 purposes in mind for this rally and sit-in. First was to make a statement that this ordinance is not the best way to handle any perceived problems in Palo Alto. The second is to educate others in the community about the issues, the real issues, as we see them. Third is to recruit and encourage people to come and help us in positive ways to make a real difference in people's lives. There are several reasons why we want to make a statement. Number one, we feel it's important to express publicly our beliefs and our feelings about this issue. 2, we believe that it's an infringement on all of our civil rights, not just those of homeless people. And 3, we believe this ordinance abridges free speech and individual freedom. This is not the kind of city we want to live in, one that's intolerant and punishes people for being poor.
Right on.
And that was just the first of a whole bunch of good speeches, and then some real action, sitting on the sidewalk with candles up and down the avenue talking to folks, and hopefully beginning the first in a series of demonstrations in Palo Alto, San Jose, Mountain View, and Santa Barbara, which also passed an anti-homeless law last Tuesday about sitting on their 13-block area of State Street. This is it for Bathrop's Piers Broadsides this week. I'm off to a homelessness and housing conference in Sacramento. I'll be back midweek next week. Please do give me a call at 423-HUFF if you have anything you want to put on the air, if you have any questions about what has been on the air, or if you're a critic. You don't just have to write a nasty anonymous letter to the paper. You can actually be on the air and engage in a healthy debate. I want to thank you for joining Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. I want to thank you for listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And I encourage you once again to join the San Jose homeless fighting their much harsher sitting ban with much less support for them. That's a march that'll start 11 a.m. Tuesday, April 29th, 11 a.m. at the First Christian Church, 80 South 5th Street. So come on down and help out. And tune into Bathrop Spears Broadsides next week at 11 a.m. at the same time on Sunday when we do our regular broadcast.